And since it is the appearance of Advaita Acharya, it is fasting till noon. So we don't have too many options now at 10 o'clock. So we continue with the nectar of Katha. And we have with us a very special devotee. I would like to welcome His Grace Tukaram Prabhu and invite him to come on the asan. Tukaram Prabhu is a disciple of His Holiness Lokanath Swami Maharaj, and he is the temple president at ISKCON Laguna Beach. Some of you may have seen the song book where there is a Panchatattva deities on the back cover. So those deities are at the Laguna Beach ISKCON temple. So Tukaram Prabhu, he has been practicing Krishna consciousness for more than 25 years now. 24 years. And His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, he regularly visits this temple, and they are very close. And Maharaj has been inviting him to come to Chowpatty for last 20 years. And whenever Govind Prabhu and myself, we visit California, we always make it a point to spend at least one evening with Tukaram Prabhu and his wonderful congregation there at Laguna Beach. And he's always been a very gracious host and a very close friend. And as today is Advaita Acharya's appearance day, and it is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Acharyare Shraddha Bhakti Griha Sampad Dhane Sakala Safala Hoela Prabhur Aradhane. Advaita Acharya was a grihastha, and he was utilizing his life, his soul, his wealth, his family, all his assets in Krishna's service. And that is how Advaita Acharya was serving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all the Vaishnavas at Shantipur. And when I see Tukaram Prabhu, I get reminded of this, because he's a grihastha running a business, and he has a family, he has 5 children, but he is fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and he is one of the most shastrically astute devotees I have seen in ISKCON. He is a Mahapandit. And along with that, he also, you know, holds a brown belt in jiu-jitsu. So he's a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya. And in America. And in America, you have to do all your work yourself. So practically, he runs around cleaning the temple and taking care of, you know, whatever Shudra activities. So in one sense, as Mahaprabhu says, Gopi Bharatur Padakamalayor, Das, Das, Dasano Das. So it has been a great honor and privilege for me, and including Govind Prabhu, to know him for last so many years as a close friend. And I'm sure all of you will really appreciate his class. And he's spent many years, developed very close relationships with very senior ISKCON devotees for last several years, and he has lots of realizations. And Laguna Beach is not a very easy place to preach Krishna consciousness, because it is like a heavenly planet. You know, right from the temple, if you are sitting and seeing the deities from the door outside, you can actually see the ocean, you know, and people doing sense gratification and everything. But he has been steadily pushing on the mission of Srila Prabhupada in Laguna Beach, and a wonderful congregation is there, and they have a fantastic Rath Yatra every year. And the likes of Giriraj Maharaj, Indradumna Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj, all of these wonderful saintly devotees regularly visit this temple. And let us express our gratitude and welcome His Grace Tukaram Prabhu by loudly chanting, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Thank you all very much.
Almost everything conceivable somebody could say to glorify somebody, even being extremely hyperbolic and going way overboard. But something he didn't say that I want to say is that I also accept Radhanath Maharaj fully as my Shiksha Guru. He is Sri Guru to me, and so I feel being here amongst all of you, many of whom are his disciples, that I am at home with my family, I just wanted to make that statement before I started. Hari Bol. I also know that Radhanath Maharaj has a penchant for speaking perpetually. So you're probably all trained to sit for 8 hours in a Saptaha style fashion. Being from a Western background, it's a little bit less genetically natural for me to sit for extremely long periods of time to hear Hari Katha. And so I wanted to offer all of you the opportunity, if you want to stand up, I'm going to chant Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya for a couple minutes. If you want to stand up and stretch a little bit, or you can just sit there in Siddhasana or Padmasana as you like. I'm okay with that too. But we'll just chant for 1 or 2 minutes again. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya. Jai. Despite having many bad qualities and having many karmic challenges in life, somehow or other, by great good fortune and by the blessings of the devotees and my elders, I've had the wonderful opportunity to live for the last 16 years in the footshade of Sri Sri Panchatattva in Laguna Beach. I stay at the temple. I'm there full time. And I think, not including this trip to India, I think I've spent a total of 20 days not at the temple in the last 16 years. And I'm a full grihastha as well, because I think in that same time period, the last 16 years, I've spent 20 days separate from my wife and our children. So I'm with my family and I'm with the deities. And the deities are also, they're my family as well. I'm hoping that I get to spend the rest of my life serving my Ishtadevs, serving Panchatattva. And I'm hoping that that even goes on beyond this life. I'm hoping that I get to serve them eternally. And I, for some years, I tried to not want to go to Mayapur because I felt like I was being an unchaste wife, that my Prabhu was there in front of me, that Laguna Beach was Mayapur, and that to leave there or think I wanted to go somewhere else showed a lack of faith, a lack of Shraddha Nishtha. I just had to cultivate the idea of being happy in my Prabhu Datta Desh. And to not do that was to be an offender and not recognize the mercy that had been given to me. Anyway, last year, when I was going to do some seva for my dear friend Nittai Prabhu, who departed this world and also followed the instruction of Radhanath Maharaj, who said I should come to help with the immersing of his ashes in the Ganga, I had the realization, oh, just because Panchatattva is in Mayapur, and I have to fully accept that, it doesn't mean that they're not in... Excuse me, just because they're fully in Laguna, and I have to accept that, it doesn't mean they're therefore not in Mayapur. And I can see my same Ishtadev in Mayapur that I see at home, and it's not dichotomized as an either-or, but actually can be both. And I made a promise that I would go to Mayapur every year with my whole family. And so we did that. We braved the 20 hours of flying, and we decided to break our journey in Chaupati to fulfill the instructions of Radhanath Maharaj and the strong advice of Gauranga Prabhu and Govinda Prabhu, who for many years have been telling us to come. And I was thinking about postponing my trip because in the last 15 years, I haven't missed an Advaita Saptami in my local temple. I'm going to leave Mayapur just before Gaur Purnim because I couldn't dream of not being in Laguna Beach for Gaur Purnim. As strange as that might sound, it's almost like it would be sacrilegious to stay in Mayapur and not go home. But even not being there for Advaita Saptami and Nityananda Triodasi, it was like a big question mark. Maybe we should just have postponed our trip. Maybe we'll go after Gaur Purnim. We really had to think about it. So anyway, I gave class on Friday, and when Gauranga Prabhu asked me to also speak today, I was more or less planning to refuse, respectfully. I was going to ask, is it okay if I don't speak? But then I found out that it was Advaita Saptami. And I felt very happy. That I would get a chance to speak and glorify my Prabhu on his appearance day. So I said, yes, I'll accept. And I felt like it was, I felt that the Panchatattva was smiling on me to allow this to happen, because I love to speak. I love to speak about Gaur. I love to speak about Panchatattva. It brings me great joy, and I feel very close to them when I have a chance to glorify them. I also like to hear. I also like to chant, but somehow or other, Krishna gave me a big tongue. And now that I'm getting a little older, I don't get to eat as much prasad as I used to, so I have to do something with my tongue and engaging it in speaking Gaur Katha, Krishna Katha. Is really good for me. Okay. So, Chandramali Maharaj, he spoke some lila, and oftentimes it's said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, other places, tattva lila. Tattva lila. Siddhanta ras. Siddhanta lila. You find these two things mentioned. And you have to say siddhanta before ras, because if you say ras siddhanta, it means something else. If you say lila tattva, it means something else. Tattva lila means you speak some philosophical truth, and then once you've established that, then you're able to dive into, you're able to dive into lila or ras, and it has an effect on you. It really goes deep into your heart. And if you do it right, if you get the blessings of the Vaishnavas, if you chant Harinam with a vow, if you do seva, if you cultivate humility, then when you hear lila katha, when you hear rasa katha, you actually become transported. And the shastra, the words of our lineage, have the power to actually transport you to that realm. Another amazing phenomenon is when you cultivate Vipralamba, you find Sambhog. That's another brilliant revelation of our lineage. It's a crest jewel of our lineage, that by cultivating Vipralamba Seva, within that you find Sambhog. Okay. So, I know that Maharaj spoke this verse, so I thought that maybe we would just read this verse to start us off. In 1975, on the way to Saptami, Prabhupada was in Mayapur. He gave class, and guess what verse he picked to give class on? He picked this verse here. Yeah. Now, this verse is special. Chaitanya Charitamrita is our higher level learning. Prabhupada said Bhagavad Gita was undergraduate. Srimad Bhagavat was master's graduate course, and Chaitanya Charitamrita was postgraduate, our doctoral course, our PhD course. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita starts with 14 Pakka Sanskrit shlokas. It's a book in Bengali so that the Bengali Vaishnavas could learn the Goswami's revelation, what they'd received from Mahaprabhu, they codified it in Sanskrit. But it required a little more adhikar. So there were so many Bengali Vaishnavas, and they needed to get that nurturing of the Goswami's revelation, what they'd received from Mahaprabhu, and what had been made even sweeter by their own realizations, and had been penned in Vrindavan. The tree of Mahaprabhu's mercy grew in Vrindavan and Puri. It started in Bengal, but it actually had to be re-imported. And that was the journey of Shyamananda and the other Vaishnavas. They went back. They went to give it back. Narottam, they went to give it back. Srinivas. So anyway, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, one of its primary purposes is to explain things in simple Bengali language. And even for Hindiwalas, I think that Bengali is very close to their language. And so reading Bengali is easier than reading Sanskrit. And it's easier to understand. And it's written more in a prose style, a little bit less in a kavya style. And so it's easier to read. It's almost like just reading a paragraph. It's like reading normal things. And so the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it takes these verses and it will spend 50 padas in Bangla explaining one verse in Sanskrit. And you really get to understand what the verses mean. So the Chaitanya Charitamrita starts with 14 Sanskrit shlokas. This is one of them. There are 6 about Sriman Mahaprabhu, 5 about Nityananda, 2 about Advaita, and 1 about the Panchatattva. And the first 7 chapters of the Adi Lila, which are, it's almost like a, it's almost like the fee you pay for getting to read all the wonderful pastimes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita is you have to wade through all this thick theology. In fact, I was just speaking with Gauranga Prabhu yesterday. We were planning to study the 7 chapters at the Eco Farm in Wada. Tomorrow, we're going to go there together and we're going to study these chapters because both of us are saying, oh, you know, we've read the rest of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but we need to spend some time soaking in these initial chapters. They're easy to just kind of read over quickly. The purports are very long, and just like hearing you're not the body is sometimes not sweet, you hear it so many times. Usually if you're hearing that is not sweet, it's because you're so contaminated and it's so purifying. It's like somebody with like some disease taking neem. It has an adverse reaction. It just means you need to hear it more. And when hearing that is as sweet as the leelas, then you know you can move on to the leelas with no trouble. So anyway, this is one of those 2 shlokas about Advaita Acharya. And Prabhupada's translation is, because he is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he's called Advaita. Advaitam Harina Advaitat. So from being, it's like, it's poetic. From his, Advaitat means from Advaita. So from his Advaita, Harina means with Hari, Advaitam, he's known as Advaita. So it's his name is Advaita Acharya. So then Krishnadas Kaviraj, this may even be from Sarup Damodar's Karcha. Many of these verses are coming directly from Sarup Damodar. And so some of them are from Rupa Goswami's writings. They're from our parent lineage. They're from primary sources. They're from people who were directly with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Krishnadas inherited those verses as his treasure from Rupa and Raghunath in Vrindavan, and he gave them back to the world. And he was so blessed, and he was so pure that he was able to take their teachings and break them open the same way Mahaprabhu broke open the storehouse of love of God. He was able to break open the Goswami's teachings and make them accessible for the last 500 years. So much so that when we want to learn the Goswami, their writings, we start with the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Ujjvala Nilamani, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sarup Damodar's revelation, it's all there. And that's why it's the most beloved book of the Gaudiya Granthas, of the biographies of Mahaprabhu. So, because he is non-different from Hari, he's known as Advaita, Acharyam Bhakti Samsanat. And because he propagates the cult of devotion, he's called Acharya. Acharyam Bhakti Shangsanat. So from his Shangsan, from his preaching, his sharing, his spreading. Another meaning of sana is to take something for someone else. You get something, you acquire something. It's interesting. The word sana, like many words in Sanskrit, has multifarious meanings. And samyak, which is where you get the prefix sang, like sankirtan, same thing, sankirtan. So you do kirtan together, am I right? Same thing, samyak, right? And so it means he's completely, but the interesting thing is sana means you acquire something for someone else. It also means you share something. It also means you get it for yourself. It's kind of a it's very, very perfect word to explain what it means to preach. Because by giving, you get. By taking, you naturally give. Sometimes people say, how can I help other people? You help yourself. Usually when you're young, you think, yeah, I want to help other people. When you get a little older, you think, I just want to help myself. And a natural byproduct of helping yourself is you end up becoming qualified to help other people as a byproduct. If you worry too much about helping other people, you follow? Like we do seva. Don't do seva for other people. Do seva for yourself. You serve prasad to people, you cut vegetables. Don't think like I'm blessing all the devotees by doing seva for them and helping them. Think I'm very lucky that I get to do this seva because I need this seva. I need this seva. So because he acquired for us and distributed to us bhakti, he's known as Acharya. Now these two sentiments, they're actually amazing. Because Advaita being God and Acharya being a teacher, right? You follow? These are so different. Which one of these can we do? Can we become non-different from Krishna? No. We can't, right? So number one is not within our desire, possibility, interest in any way, shape, or form. Number two very much is. So we can emulate, follow in the footsteps of, copy in a positive sense, in the sense of anuvartmanam. Not imitate in the sense of anukaranam, but anuvartmanam. We can follow in the footsteps of Advaita by acquiring and then naturally giving bhakti to others. Bhakti is so wonderful. If you acquire bhakti, naturally you want to give it. When Prabhupada lectured on this verse, he said, Gosti Anandi. He goes, bhajanandis are also good. That's also very nice. To just do your own bhajan. That's also very nice, but that's not us. If your guru was a bhajanandi, then you can achieve perfection being a bhajanandi. But our lineage is a bunch of preachers, and they instructed us we have to preach. Therefore, our path to perfection is by acquiring and giving that bhakti to others. And there's no way to get bhakti in ISKCON and not give it out. It happens automatically. So we can follow in Advaita's footsteps here. And in the rest of the translation, he is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. Bhakta avatar, such a wonderful term. Bhakta avatar. Again, it's the same idea. Bhakta and avatar, right? Mixed together. Krishna and Krishna's devotee. Devotional service is so sweet. Bhakti is so sweet that even Krishna wants to taste it. You think about that. Krishna has some lobe. He has some greed. And he thinks, I'm famous. I'm Rasik Shekhar. I'm the chief of all the rasiks. I taste everything. All the rasas I'm tasting. I'm Rasikendra. I'm the lord of ras. Two of my five kids are Rasik Shekhar and Rasikendra. Those are their names. I'm the lord of ras. But then Krishna looks and he thinks, what is it about Srimati? What is she experiencing that I'm not experiencing? And Krishna thinks, I'm not Rasik Shekhar. I'm not Rasikendra. I have to find out what it's like. What is it in me? Right? Krishna's Purna. He's Purnatama. He's the most complete. And so Radharani, she has an unlimited object of love. She is the ashray. That's the same word is used here. She is the ashray of love. She's prem ashray. And Krishna is the object of love. He's prem vishay. And Krishna's wondering, okay, I'm the object of love, but I want to also be the lover. But he can't do that as Krishna. And so he has to come. He has to take a further course in being Rasik. And then he becomes Rasikendra Mauli. Just like Chandramauli. Comes from Mool. Means like the chief. So he's Rasikendra Mauli. He is the chief of the lords of Ras. And that is a name for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That my son's name is Rasikendra Mauli. So Bhaktavataram Isham Tam Advaita Achayam Ashraye. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotees, therefore I take shelter of him. That's Advaita Acharya. The thing is, Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu, the two Prabhus, they occupy almost the exact same function. And one of the great blessings of living at Panchatapa Mandir is we have to lecture on Advaita and Nityananda in front of them every year, and also usually several times throughout the year. It just comes up naturally. So, you know, just like you have these beautiful deities of Panchatapa, that's our full-time set of deities. We don't bring them out for festivals. They're there all the time. And so you start to notice that, I mean, Nityananda is also a devotee, right? Nityananda Balaram, right? He's the original devotee, right? So if we glorify Advaita and we say just this, then it seems to be somewhat synonymous with Nityananda Prabhu, and then we haven't done enough service because we haven't glorified the vishesh, the special, specific glory of Advaita. You follow? If Panchatattva becomes Ek Tattva, then there's no need for Panchatattva. We're Mayavadis. And we can't appreciate. The idea of the Panchatattva is that each one of them occupies a special feature. They represent, just like you have a periodic chart of the elements, if you take an introductory chemistry course and you learn that the whole world, with all of its shapes and colors and sizes and ingredients, if you break it down and you make it small enough, you make it into quanta, small, irreducible parts. It's a quanta. Then it breaks down into various basic elements. And every once in a while, they discover a new element, and then they add something to the periodic chart of the elements. The Panchatattva is our periodic chart of the spiritual elements. It represents a very, very streamlined, stripped down, basic understanding of what exists ontologically, eternally. You're not the body, so what are you? There are these five categories. Srivas, of course, represents the jiva. That represents all of us, Tatastha Shakti. Shakti is two. There's Gadadhar, and there's Srivas. They represent Shakti Tattva. They represent the energy of Krishna. I don't want to go into detail on this because it's not their appearance days. Gadadhar represents Radharani. Mahaprabhu represents Swayam Bhagawan Sri Krishna, the Avatari, the source of all incarnations. Krishna in the mood of Radha. It said that the one became two eternally to relish rust. And now to even increase that rust, the two have become one. Meaning Brahman is Radha and Krishna. Didn't become, that's not really the right way to say it. Brahman is Radha Krishna. The one absolute truth is two. Why? To relish rust. To relish bhakti. And bhakti means you have to have a bhakta and Bhagavan. You have to have a lover and a beloved. Then there can be love. Love is a harmonizing force which binds two people together and makes them one. But it depends for its existence on those two existing as separate individuals. If there's no mother and child, there's no love between them. If there's no bhakta and bhagavan, there's no bhakti.
Therefore, when the Mayavadis say we believe in bhakti as a sadhana, but not a sadhya, we say that's not bhakti. That's something else. That's not bhakti. Bhakti is both our sadhana, our practice, and our sadhya, and our perfection. So the two then became one as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the incarnations of the Lord, the manifestations of the Lord, are Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita. But then you run into a problem. Advaita is Mahavishnu, or Sadashiva. We'll discuss those two terms in just a moment. But Advaita Prabhu is Mahavishnu or Sadashiva. But then Nityananda is Balaram himself, who's several levels up on the ontological chain, on the hierarchical chain from Advaita. And it doesn't feel right. Because then Advaita's position could simply be reduced into derivative of Nityananda Prabhu's. And then there's no need for him to be a member of the Panchatattva. You follow? Just like if Krishna includes within him all avatars. So then if you worship Krishna, automatically you're doing everything. Shraddha Shabde Bishwa Sutrita Nischoy. Krishna Bhakti Hoila Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. Faith, Shraddha. Shradd means trust. Dha means to place. Shraddha, to place your trust. Shraddha Shabde. The word Shraddha, Bishwas, another word for faith, is the conviction or the faith. Sudrita Nischoy, the certain, strong conviction. It's just another three words that mean the same thing as Shraddha. Krishna Bhakti Hoila, Sarva Karma Krita Hoy. If I serve Krishna, everything is done. Everything is complete. Nothing remains. So if these five represent essential tattvas, then we have to figure out a way to appreciate Advaita in a unique way that separates him from Nityananda Prabhu. You follow? So then there's a purpose for the Panchatattva, and it makes sense, and they really do represent a Pirachar, the elements. If you find an element and it's made up of two other elements, parent elements, then this element gets taken off the chart, and you just have these two, and they automatically include this one. Do you see the point? It's called problematizing. You find a problem, and then the solution makes sense. If you don't realize there's a problem, then the solution, you think, oh, I knew that already. Sometimes when you're teaching, you go, do you know the answer to that question? And they go, yeah. And you go, what's the answer? And then they give an answer. You say, no, that answer is wrong. Then you go, now you point out what's wrong with it. Then you go, do you know the answer? I don't know the answer. I have a lot of doubts. Please, I don't know. I'm confused. Then you give the answer, and then that answer holds in their heart forever. They never forget it. It becomes part of their darshan. Otherwise, we hear so many things. They go in one ear, out the other. We don't think about them too much. We think we know everything already. At least I know, of course, none of you great Vaishnavas feel that way. But for someone who needs to undergo the remedial course like myself, I need to realize I don't know something. And then I develop a desire to know that thing. And then when somebody tells me that, I'm grateful for it. And I appreciate it. And it becomes a treasure in my life. And then I make that one with my heart. I know other people may be pure enough. They just, whatever they hear, they appreciate. But for myself, this is how I learn. Okay, so we have a problem. We have Advaita as a Bhakta avatar, but the original Bhakta avatar is Nityananda Prabhu. So he's maybe just like an extra Bhakta avatar. Doesn't really need it. We could have four tattvas instead of five. Chatur tattva instead of Pancha tattva. For their followers, Advaita and Nityananda, in many ways, they occupy the same role. They were the heads of their lineages. And so, one of the reasons why half the sons of Advaita deviated, they said Advaita is Krishna. That was their realization. They kind of went a little too far. The whole purpose of the Keturi festival, what came out of the Keturi festival was the Panchatattva. Panchatattva makam Krishnam bhakta rupa sarupakam bhakta avataram bhakta akhyam namami bhakta shaktikam. That's there in the Gorgonadesh Deepika. It's there from around that time. They came together. They figured out each one of these personalities with their lineage. They each have a role to play. They're each special in some way. Not that Nityananda is everything for as far as they don't need Advaita. Not that Advaita is everything for as far as they don't need Nityananda. But that every one of these personalities is essential in the life of a devotee. You may still have the head of your lineage, but each one of these personalities is part of your spiritual heritage. They're all there in the spiritual world. You get to be with them forever. Just like Rupa Goswami, he has no direct disciples, maybe Jiva, who had no direct disciples. So Rupa Goswami is no one's Diksha Pranali. But everyone prays to Rupa Manjari. He's part of every lineage's Shiksha Pranali. Because they all see they want to go back and serve Rupa Manjari eternally in the spiritual world. They have a connection. The connection is not simply a Diksha connection, but there's also a Shiksha connection. And that connection is meaningful. So meaningful that it's actually useful. You go back to the spiritual world, you serve that person eternally in the spiritual world. Therefore, Narottam, who's not in the Diksha Pranali of Rupa Goswami, he prays to Rupa Manjari. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who's not in the Diksha Pranali of Rupa Manjari, of Rupa Goswami, he prays to Rupa Manjari. As should all of us. So Advaita Acharya, Nityananda Prabhu, Gadadhar, Srivas, they're our family. Whether we come in their exact vangsha or not, in their exact pranali or not, from the time of Keturi, everybody came together and became a family. Vrindavan Das had already figured this out when he wrote the Chaitanya Bhagavat, but the fighting was going on. You can see it. He's talking about it in the pages of the Chaitanya Bhagavat. If you accept one brother but don't accept another, then it's Ardha Kukuti Nyaya, half-hand logic. You want the eggs. Of course, we don't want eggs, so it doesn't really work for Vaishnavas. But anyway, you want the egg, but you don't want to feed, so you cut the neck, and then there's no more egg, and then it's like, what are you doing? We say the goose that laid the golden egg. So, we have to find something in Advaita. Here's something interesting. The first seven chapters of the Adi Lila are based on those 14 verses. So it's 14 verses in Sanskrit, many of which are from Sarup Damodar's personal karcha, his personal diary. Krishna's Kaviraj says in several places, if you know this truth, you must have heard it from Sarup Damodar. No one else in the history of the world has understood this about Mahaprabhu. I'm writing exactly what I heard from Rupa Raghunath, from Sarup. Raghunath gave the lineage of Sarup Damodar. He was in Puri. He was trained by Sarup. He went to Vrindavan. Even the Goswamis, his elders, they would hear Gaurakatha from him because he was the holder of that legacy of Sarup. And so Krishnadas just wrote down what he'd learned from them. And so the first, second, and third, and fourth chapters, they're those six verses about Mahaprabhu. The fifth chapter is the five verses about Nityananda, and the sixth chapter is the two verses about Advaita, and the seventh chapter is the one verse about Panchatattva. He goes through the first seven chapters of Chaitanya Charitamrita. They're a commentary on these verses. The whole six chapters are a commentary on the two verses about Advaita. Hundreds of verses are spent explaining one Sanskrit verse. You get to understand every word, all the nuance, all the meaning. Something happens in this sixth chapter. Nityananda is glorified. Advaita is glorified for being in the ecstasy of devotional service. Advaita says, Ami Chaitanya Das, I am a servant of Chaitanya, I am a servant of Chaitanya, I am a servant of Chaitanya. He dances in great ecstasy. But then it says the original source of that sentiment is Nityananda Prabhu. Why in a chapter glorifying Advaita? Why in a chapter glorifying Advaita? Then you find that any glory he has is derivative. The original origin of that is Nityananda Prabhu. And then you feel very sad. You follow? We still haven't found something special about Advaita. What is about Advaita? Why has he been enshrined eternally in the Panchatattva? Why has he become our Ishtadeva? What's the reason? And then you read the fifth chapter, which is dedicated to Nityananda Prabhu. And Krishnadas Kaviraj is a Nityananda Bhakta. He got Radha Govinda. He got Vrindavan. He got everything. He got the Goswamis. Everything Krishnadas has, he got from Nityananda Prabhu. He says it directly. And in that chapter, Advaita is glorified. And what is said about Advaita in that chapter, that must be essential. That must be critical. That must be special. So Nityananda comes up in Advaita's chapter, and Advaita comes up in Nityananda's chapter. And something said, and that same thing is said in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It's said in many places in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a special point. It's all over the Gaudiya literature. Whenever you talk about Advaita, it's there in Bhakti Ratnakar. It's everywhere. What is that? What's said about Advaita? What sets him apart from everybody else? Does anybody want to guess? That was non-rhetorical. I'm like, does anybody want to guess? Compassion? Because Nityananda's not compassion. Nityananda's Kripa avatar. He's the incarnation of compassion. Kaviraj Goswami says he's Kripa avatar. He does not make a difference between who is higher or lower. He liberates everybody. So yes, Advaita is compassionate. But that compassion, we could say legitimately, is derivative. Because the source of that compassion is the incarnation of compassion. See how I faulted his answer? Normally I would appreciate his answer because it's a nice answer, but I want to make this point. So now we have to get, so what is it? What is it about Advaita? Huh? He's Shiva Tattva. Okay. We say he is, we'll get into this for a second. Advaita is not Shiva Tattva. Advaita is Vishnu Tattva. Sada Shiva is not Shiva Tattva. Sada Shiva is Vishnu Tattva. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami, which is absolutely essential, and Prabhupada says, if you want to know about bhakti and the Lord and the devotees, you must read this book. In that Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumar goes to Vaikuntha. He crosses over the Viraja River. He escapes Mukti. Escapes Sayuja, and then he meets Sadashiva, who is Vishnu with four arms, worshiping himself with kirtan. Sadashiva is Vishnu Tattva in Vaikuntha, but it's the origin of the sentiment of, I am a servant. It's Krishna worshiping himself. Shiva in this world comes from that tattva, but it's not exactly Shiva tattva. It's this sentiment of, I am worshiping the Lord. Sanatana Goswami, Gopakumar says, it was amazing to see Krishna worshiping himself. And of course, the means he used for that was Sankirtan. So when Krishna wants to do worship, when Krishna wants to do archana, he does Sankirtan. It comes from the spiritual world. Ultimately, Harinam is Radha Tantra. It's Radha's own secret method of worship. The gopis chant Harinam. They chant Krishna's name. Yashoda chants Krishna's name. That's why it's Goloka Premadhan Harinam Sankirtan. So yeah, even if you say Shiva Tattva, I just want to add a little nuance to it, but even if you say Shiva Tattva, it's the sentiment of being other than, of being different than Krishna, and that's there in Balaram, who's Krishna's counterform. So still it's derivative. So what is it special about Advaita? What's said about him? And by the way, even if those answers are good, it's not what's in the fifth chapter and all over the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's not the special point that Krishna's Kaviraj makes himself. So even though they may be legitimate answers, it's not Kaviraj Goswami's answer. So there's only one answer to the question because... Anybody else? That's a good answer. Nityananda is an avadhut. Avadhuts are mentioned in the old Vedic literature. There's the Shramas, the avadhuts, the Kshatriyas. For as long as there's been Vedic culture, there's been a group of individuals who transcended it. And they referred to in old Vedic names. We use modern names like Babaji to communicate the same point. The Naga Babas. They're just outside. They're beyond Vedic culture. That, of course, doesn't mean that every Naga Baba is transcendental. If there's naked, sitting around a fire, smoking chillums of ganja all day, then, you know, they have a problem. It's not simply by monkeys run around naked, it doesn't mean they're transcendental. Lusty people run around naked, it doesn't mean they're transcendental. You have to reject all the external trappings and have the spiritual adhikar to go with it. You don't just get to do one thing and not the other. So, yeah, that's a nice point. Advaita is an acharya, and Nityananda is an avatut. But these things are kind of low-key. Because these are eternal personalities. You follow? So this is something about how they sort of interface with this world, which might be, that might be an important point. But again, this isn't what Kaviraj Goswami said. You follow? It's not what Kaviraj Goswami said. It's not an essential difference. It might be a difference. For instance, I was talking to one wonderful devotee yesterday in front of Radhanath Maharaj. And we were discussing, he is a disciple of Radhanath Maharaj. His name's Ananta. He's one of the big Kirtaniyas who's at the program. He's from New York City. Wonderful devotee. And Maharaj was sitting there in the car, and Ananta was there, and I also had the good fortune of being there. And we were discussing, how Ananta was raised, his whole family, as disciples of Gaur Govinda Maharaj. And he himself was also going to take initiation from Gaur Govinda Maharaj. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj approached him and said, "When will you become my disciple? When will you take initiation from me?" Which is very unusual that Gaur Govinda Maharaj would ask such a question. And he said, "Whenever you're ready to give me initiation." And Gaur Govinda Maharaj slapped him on the back and said, "Very good. I'm very happy with you." That slap is like the slap of Abhiram Thakur's whip. It's like the kick of Nityananda Prabhu. That slap is powerful. It meant he was blessing him. And then Gaur Govinda Maharaj left the planet shortly thereafter. And he didn't receive initiation, and he was heartbroken because no one could be his guru. His guru had passed away. And with that slap, he'd accepted him as his disciple, but he wasn't ready for initiation yet, so he didn't get what to do. Then he met Radhanath Maharaj. And he felt like he couldn't accept Radhanath Maharaj as his guru because he was so different. He was so different than Gaur Govinda Maharaj. Radhanath Maharaj is so soft and sweet and appreciative, and, right? Sometimes Maharaj chastises me, and I feel very blessed. When he's nice to me, I feel like he's cheating me. But at the same time, I'm so immature in my spiritual life. If he's not nice to me, I'd probably reject him because my faith is so weak. So I know he's nice to me because I'm like a child. You tell a child, "Oh, very good." You have to encourage them because they need that. They're so young. And so I know that Maharaj does that because I'm like that. But when he chastises me, I feel especially blessed. So Gaur Govinda Maharaj used to chastise like anything. He would hit his disciples with his danda. In class, his disciples sit very close like this. And the real advanced disciples, they sit right there so he could just bam and hit them with his danda. You can see, there's video of this. Maharaj was taken out of a village 350 years ago. He was like a Udiyan Vaishnava from the time of Mahaprabhu. He was so advanced, such a pundit. You hear him speak, you think, "I should never give class ever again. I should simply play his lecture and let him speak. I should never give class." The way he spoke is so profound. So Maharaj was Indian, Radhanath Maharaj was Western, Maharaj was heavy, Radhanath Maharaj was sweet. I can't accept him as my guru. But then he finally realized, actually, they're the same. It may manifest a little different, but it's the same revelation. And then he accepted him as guru. So that was an answer to the point about Acharya and Avadhut. You follow? On a deeper level, you have to find the spiritual realization behind that, and that would be one. So that wouldn't be enough to make them a different tattva. That would be a different way of preaching. That was my long-winded way of trying to refute your explanation. What do you think? Yeah? Okay. So, what's said about Advaita Acharya? What's said about him over and over again? And now we'll go back to Sadashiva and Mahavishnu. By the way, Advaita Acharya also is giving Braj Prem. Mahavishnu doesn't give Braj Prem. Advaita Acharya is giving Braj Prem. In the Gorgonodish Deepika, which is our book where we explain, because Mahaprabhu is Krishna, therefore all of his parshads must also be parshads from Krishna Lila. So you got to start to make points of comparison. This Goswami is this Mandri, this person is this cowherd boy. You have to make those, you follow? You have to make those connections, and the picture makes sense. As a result of understanding Braj and the parshads from Braj, they extend to Gaur Lila, and that's why Gaudiya Vaishnava is in their Siddha Swarup. They're generally a gopi, Manjari in Braj, and they're a Brahmin boy assisting with Mahaprabhu Sankirtan Leela in the other corner of Golok, where Mahaprabhu enjoys his eternal pastimes. That's not to say you can't be other things, but that's generally the destination of most of our acharyas. So there was a cowherd boy, a gopa named Sadashiva, and that's also described. And so he saw Sadashiva saw the cowherd boy, the cowherd boy's playing, and he also desired to play, and so he took a form of a gopa, and so Sadashiva's also a gopa in Vrindavan, and therefore also capable of giving Braj Prem. That's in the Gorgonadesh Deepika, exactly the same place where we get the idea that he's Sadashiva and Mahavishnu from. Then his wife, Sita Thakurani, had two wives, Sri and Sita Thakurani. Sita Thakurani is Yogamaya personified. Definitely has Braj Prem. And with a nifty little tool of Abhinatvam Nama Nami No, that there's no difference between the name and the name. There's also no difference between the Shakti and Shaktiman, and therefore Advaita also through Yogamaya, through Sita Thakurani also has. So not that he's merely Mahavishnu, but the point of him being Mahavishnu, normally we would consider, like Nityananda Prabhu was glorified as being Sankarshan. And at one point, Krishna Kaviraj says, what glory is there in calling him Sankarshan? He's Balaram. Sankarshan is several levels down from Balaram, who's a supreme tattva. I've just got so much time left to speak. I can tangent and I can make this point I want to make. This is a general point. This is a general point. And I just have to make a little bookmark where I was in my class in my mind real quick. Okay. We worship Krishna as a supreme because in Krishna we find more potential for love and for rasa. If God was incapable, normally people think of God as being some static, aloof, transcendent being. God becomes almost like some kind of robot or vending machine. You find an extreme version of this in the Mimamsa, Karma Mimamsa, where it's like, whether God exists or not, I don't care. I do my yajna, I chant the mantra correctly, he has to give me the results, like a vending machine. You put in the right mantra, you offer the right ghee, and then you just get out whatever your karma is. And he may exist, he may not exist. The Mimamsakas, they don't care. It's a system. But here we are, we're all individuals. Therefore, our source must also be individual. Otherwise, where did our individuality come from? If you say like Shankar, it's all illusion, well then where'd the illusion come from? Anyway, you slice it, God must have some vishesh, some shakti, some power. Even if it's only the illusory power. That's why I call them Mayavadis. They say there is no individuality. There is no variety. It's all illusion. Well then where'd the illusion come from? Oh, that came from God. Well then there's God and then there's God with illusion. So you still have two things. Therefore, you're not a monist. You're not an Advaitin because you have God and illusion. And which one's more powerful? The illusion, because you're saying that Brahman became influenced by illusion. Therefore, we call you Mayavadi. You're saying Maya is God. You follow that? And far from being an Advaitin, you have no Advaita. You have no Vedant because you have God and illusion. And you can't explain how illusion came from God because God has no Vishesh. Illusion is a Vishesh. If you acknowledge that illusion exists, you just acknowledge that a vishesh exists, and now you've done away with any possibility of Advaita. We are the real Advaitins. Because we say Krishna is rasa vigraha. He has all vishesh within him. And one of those visheshas is Brahman. Unlimited visheshas, and one of them is Brahman. One of them is the impersonal form. And there can be so many others as well. And all of our individuality and all the variety in this world can be accounted for very elegantly. That's real Vedant. Jamadi Yasyata, everything comes from Brahman. Therefore, you have to explain how we all come from Brahman as well. So just a little critique of Shankar. Just to keep it nice. So why we love Krishna. We see Krishna above Vishnu. Because allowing yourself to become affected by love is more developed. It's more advanced. Krishna in love, Krishna is God in love. Krishna is God whose heart is melting. Krishna is God who can cry out of love. To not have that would mean that Krishna wasn't even as much as we are. How can we have these things if they don't originate in Krishna? So the Goswamis, they thought about all these points of what comes from what. Like if you have a judge and they're in a courtroom, they're addressed as Your Honor, or here in India they probably follow the Commonwealth, they say My Lord. You say My Lord? It's a Commonwealth. In America, we hate that kind of respect, so we can't say My Lord, it's too much for us. Because we're a bunch of rebels. And so we say Your Honor. But we say Your Honor. That judge is addressed as Your Honor. Then that judge goes home. And then the wife says, hey, honey, can you take out the trash? There was one Gladstone. He was the Prime Minister of India at the height of the British Raj. The Prime Minister of England at the height of the British Raj. And someone came to do an interview with him at 10 Downing Street. And they found him in the backyard. He was playing with his child or granddaughter or something like that. And she was on his back, riding him around the backyard like a horsey. He was on all fours, crawling around the backyard. And he wrote an article. And he said, the most powerful man in the world, and what's he doing? He's playing. You understand? Nietzsche said, I could believe in a God who would dance. If God is incapable of lila and prema and love and reciprocation, then we're more than God. Therefore, you find that person who has that potential, that is the highest. So we worship God as a child. We worship God as a child, not as a parent. Krishna says in Gita, Pitaham asya jagato mata data pitamaha. I'm the mother and father of the universe. But we don't worship God like that. We worship God as a child. And Bhakti Santa Saraswati told us why. He met with a Professor Southers from Ohio State University in the 1929 in Calcutta, and he explained it to him. He said, you worship your parent, you appreciate your parent because they did for you when you were a child. They gave to you. You pass stool on them, they clean you up. You vomit, they clean you up. They bathe you, they feed you, they take care of you. Then you become an adult, and out of gratitude, you give something back. So the origin of your love is what they did for you. Therefore, your love is not a haituki. It has a hetu. It's not a hetu. It has a hetu. It's business. They gave to you, now you give back to them. We worship Krishna as a child because it's just love. The child doesn't do anything. Just they exist and we love. We worship Krishna in a forest instead of a palace with a vanamali and a peacock feather. Peacock feather, just pick up a forest, stick it in your hand. Why? When Krishna goes back to Vrindavan, he has to take off all of his royal garments because the Vrijvasis will not accept him in that way. When he gets back to Vrindavan in Gopal Champu, he had been sending wealth and ornaments to the Vrijvasis the whole time he was gone in Mathura. But when he got back there, they were all impoverished. They all were wearing rags. But he sent them so many costly garments. Why were they wearing rags? Because they sold those costly garments and they gave that money to Purohits and Brahmanas so they would do yajnas to get Krishna to come back to Vrindavan. It's cute, it's funny. But really think about it. The Vrijvasis love Krishna so much. They love him so much, they even forget he's God. That's higher. Therefore, Yashoda is Krishna's real mother. Vrindavan is the only place where that can exist. So the Ratha Yatra is the gopis meeting Krishna Kurukshetra and saying, this is not the right place. There's all these other people here. Just like when a husband and wife meet after a long time, if there's a lot of people present, they can't embrace. They can't speak sweetly to each other. They won't be comfortable in that environment. They feel so much, but they can't feel that. They can't express that in front of other people. The Vrijvasis love Krishna so much, when he leaves Vrindavan, they can't go with him. Because they wouldn't be able to express this kind of love, and that kind of love is their very essence. They are that love personified. This is why we worship Krishna. So Mahavishnu is so far down in our hierarchy that when even Sankarshan, who's above Mahavishnu, Krishna covers what value is there in calling him Sankarshan? But he says, I have to because the great souls did. So there must be some value in it, so I repeat it. But there's something special about the way to being Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is responsible for the creation of the material world. He's responsible for all of us. Mahavishnu creates this world, and we come from Mahavishnu. Krishna is in Golok Vrindavan enjoying pastimes. To think too much about the material world will disturb the flow of the Leela, and so Vishwanath Chakravartikur says conclusively, Krishna is unaware of the suffering that goes on in the material world. That's within the jurisdiction of Vishnu. So Mahavishnu is our origin, and Mahavishnu understands our plight. When the Supreme Absolute Truth interfaces with the material world, that is Vishnu. It's the Supreme Transcendent Being relating to this material world. Krishna is the private life of God. Krishna is love in transcendence. Vishnu is interfacing with the material world. This is very, very relevant for all of us because we are in the material world. Nityananda, Balaram, he's up there in that abode. He's a manifestation, an incarnation in the spiritual world. Mahavishnu is the incarnation that creates and maintains the material world. And therefore, the plight of the jivas is his concern. Advaitacharya is glorified in Nityananda's chapter, in Mahaprabhu's chapter, in his own chapter, in other chapters, in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, in all of the Gaudiya Granthas. Because it was by his prayers and by his selfless offering of Ganga Jal and Tulsi Manjari that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this world. He saw suffering. He himself could have given the Yuga Dharma. That's what he normally does. But his heart melting with mercy, he thought, if Krishna could come, if Krishna could come himself, then not only would the Yuga Dharma be fulfilled, but if Krishna himself came, something which the Yuga avatar can never give could be given, Braj Prem. While that was happening, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Krishna was thinking, what is it about Radharani? What is it about me that she sees? What is the glory of her love? I can't understand. I'm seeing it and I'm becoming eager. I have one lobe. He has three lobes. I haven't been able to fulfill as Krishna. I have to come as Radharani. Mahaprabhu came as Radharani to fulfill his most selfish, personal, exalted desires, to understand the love of Radharani, something so far beyond what we could ever have. Mahaprabhu came for that purpose. But because Advaita was begging him, because Advaita was pleading with him with a melting heart to liberate us, those two times mixed together. It's the greatest secret of creation. Those two times mixed together. And Mahaprabhu came down to eat a feast. But if you're eating a feast and there's a bunch of beggars, they get the same feast you happen to be eating on that day. And so Mahaprabhu came to relish Radha Bhava Jyuti Suvalitam. He came with a sentiment, complexion of Radharani. He came in that mood, but because of the way Tacharya was begging for us, then that got distributed. And the most secret thing became given to all. Our appreciation for Advaita Acharya is directly into proportion of our understanding of what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. Advaita Acharya is responsible for Mahaprabhu coming. Whatever you think Mahaprabhu came to give, that's what Advaita Acharya gets credit for. You think it's mukti, he gets that credit. You think it's prem, he gets that credit. You think it's braj prem, he gets that. You think it's radha prem in the mood of a manjari in Goloka Vrindavan, that's what he gets credit for. Mahaprabhu is a drunkard. He's drinking the wine of Krishna Prem. And when you drink, you dance. And he's dancing while drinking. What happens if you're drinking and you're dancing while you drink? Huh? You spill. Mahaprabhu is drunk on Krishna Prem, on Radha Prem, fulfilling his most selfish desire. But because he's the soul of the universe, that selfish act by him becomes the most magnanimous act that's ever been given. And if you feel your Dina and Hina and you sit at Mahaprabhu's feet, then those drops of that Krishna Prem that are dropping out of his mouth, after having touched his mouth, those drops will fall on the ground and you get to drown in a single drop eternally. But that drop is magical because if you drink it, it becomes more. And then you begin to dance. And you're still drinking. And then the next generation gets the same thing. So the gift of Mahaprabhu, whatever you think it is, it's Advaita Acharya who brought that gift to this world. That's what he's glorified for, singularly. And then instead of being a dushan, instead of being a fault, his existence as Mahavishnu becomes a bhushan. Just as the gopis leaving their husbands to go see Krishna, that is their ornament, that is their glory. In this way, we can find some special quality in Advaita. And we can anchor our love and appreciation to that eternally. And we can break things down and say his sentiment comes from Balaram and this and that. That's just fine. We can accommodate that. But we can hold on to something, some gratitude for him eternally. And we can make that one with our heart. And we can appreciate the principle of the Panchatattva and appreciate the special feature of Advaita Acharya. Shri Shitanath Prabhu ki, Advaita Acharya Bhagawan ki. I've got a little time left, so we can do one of two things. They say Madhurena Samapayet. So I'm supposed to give, I gave some, we did the opposite. He gave Leela, then I gave Tattva. I also have some Leela to give. And so we can do that for the last 15 minutes. Or if you have some questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, if I said something which is incorrect, you can also, we can, or if you have something you want to add, we can do that, or we can speak some Leela. What do you guys want to do? Raise your hand if you have anything you want to add, discuss. Yes, Prabhu. I couldn't understand what you said. Could you please say it again? You speak English just fine. I just didn't quite get what you were saying. Could you say it again?
In Krishna Lila.
Yes.
When Brahmana's son was died, and then Arjuna took a vow, I can bring that back that son from the Yamaraj, and then it was come to know that the son was still by the Mahavishnu himself.
Yes.
And Krishna took Arjuna to Mahavishnu and yes. bring back the sons.
Yes.
And for that regret only, Mahavishnu becomes Advaicharya to serve the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I come to know like that. Is right or wrong?
Where did you hear this? I'm assuming you would not speak this if it was not. Who did you hear from? You don't know? He said this, Sandipani Muni's son died later on. Brahman's son died. It was Mahavishnu's fault. He felt bad about it, so he had to come again for his aparad as a way to try to do some seva, to do some prayaschit. Yeah. You know, the thing is, I would generally speaking say, I mean, I can't comment on it because I haven't read that, but I haven't read everything. So it might be that somewhere that's written. If that's not written anywhere, then I would say that's ridiculous. It's a complete speculation, and you can just go ahead and like retire it. At the same time, I have to admit that just because I haven't read it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So it could exist. If it did exist, you know, we have like the Garga Samhita, that Radha and Krishna got into a fight, and then they cursed each other. They had to come down to the material world, and that's why Krishna came down. We have all sorts of descriptions like this. And they're interesting to a certain class of living entity. Like at the end of the Gita, it says if you hear the Gita, you go to Punya Lok, and you get Sri and Aishwarya and Vijay. But, I mean, the whole Gita is about those things aren't important. And it's just about bhakti. So sometimes those palstutis, these explanations, they're there for a particular type of person who needs that type of explanation to become peaceful. And it does not represent Gaudiya Siddhanta. I'll give you an example. Ashwatthama killed the sons of Draupadi. Then they all sat around in the Bhagavat deciding what they were going to do with Ashwatthama. Bhima, of course, wanted to kill Ashwatthama. Krishna was on the side of killing Ashwatthama. Draupadi said, don't kill Ashwatthama. Prabhupada says in the purport, two things. He says that she was soft-hearted because she was a woman, and women tend to be kind of soft-hearted. He also says she's soft-hearted because she's a Vaishnavi. I learned this from Radhanath Maharaj, by the way. Radhanath Maharaj taught me this specific point himself. It's his own point. I'm repeating to you what I heard directly from Radhanath Maharaj. On the lower level, you can say there's something we learn about feminine psychology. On a higher level, it's because she was a pure Vaishnavi. You follow? Another secondary point, I didn't learn this from Radhanath Maharaj. I learned this from Hridayananda Maharaj, who's taught me many, many valuable lessons in my life and who I'm eternally grateful to. He taught that we learn here that Krishna, God, is willing to be flexible on the rules of Dharma based on the desire of his pure devotees. And the desire of a pure devotee is a factor in establishing the rules of Dharma. That the rules of Dharma aren't clad in iron, that Krishna is actually sensitive. And we learn that point also. So I would say that the cursing, this and that, that's like a lower thing for people who, for some reason, that is attractive to them and they need to hear that about God cursing and making offenses. But that's not there in any of the Gaudiya Granthas I've ever read. And so if it is in one book, I would say it's for those individuals. And when you see an explanation like that, the explanation is pure. It's just meant for people who aren't pure. It's a perfect explanation for impure people. There's no fault in the explanation. The fault is with the people who need that explanation. You follow? So even the Tamasic Puranas, we say they're pure. They're Ved. But they're for people who are impure. I would categorize that explanation in that way. I wouldn't worry about that one too much. Do you want to comment on that? Do you want to say something further? Okay. And generally when I hear something outlandish and wild, I just raise my hand and say, hey, Maharaj, can you tell me the source of that quotation? I don't think that's wrong. You're allowed to check. And so my immediate thing would be, where's that coming from? Go find me the text, bring it to me, and let's take a look at it. Anything else? Okay, so Gauranga Prabhu wants me to tell some quick leela. I have one picked out. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, which is enough to make any Gaudiya cry. If you have any affinity, any love for the Navadvip Vasis, when you hear Mahaprabhu's leela of taking sannyas, it is exactly the same as when Krishna left Vrindavan. It'll break your heart. So we're going to skip that. And Mahaprabhu is wandering towards Vrindavan. Think, I've taken sannyas, I'm going to Vrindavan. And he's walking for many days, fasting, chanting Harinam, and just feeling the ecstasy of renunciation. And he gets to Radha Desh. He meets some cowherd boys. They chant a little bit, and he just asks, where's Vrindavan? Where's Vrindavan? Tell me where's Vrindavan. He's intoxicated by love of God, by Krishna praying. And Nityananda goes and finds some of these gopas, and he says, listen, when Mahaprabhu asks you where's Vrindavan, don't tell him where Vrindavan is. You point him over to Advaita Acharya's house in Shantipur, towards the Ganga. And so Mahaprabhu came and he goes, where's Vrindavan? Please tell me. Where's Yamunaji? He said, over that way. And he pointed towards the Ganga. And Mahaprabhu went running. And he got to the Ganga and he jumped in the Ganga. And he thought he'd achieved the Yamuna. And Nityanand Prabhu had asked, wait, till you go and meet with Mahaprabhu. So he's in the Yamuna looking for Krishna. And here comes Advaita Acharya in a boat. And Mahaprabhu says, Advaita, when did you get to Vrindavan? And Advaita says, my dear Sriman Mahaprabhu, my dear Sri Krishna Chaitanya, he was standing there on the side of the river with wet cloth. He had no dry cloth, he just jumped in the river. Whenever you go to take bath, you have to make sure you bring a gumsha with you, otherwise you get out of the river and you're wet, and you got no cloth to change into. So he gave him a dry piece of cloth. He said, actually, this is the Ganga. And then Mahaprabhu said that Nityananda has cheated me. And he said, he hasn't cheated you. The Ganga and the Yamuna come together at Prayag. And so at this place in the Ganga, it's after Prayag, and so you bathe in this side of the river, and that side of the river is actually Yamunaji flowing through the Ganga. So he protected Nityananda's reputation, at least in this instance. And then he said, come back to my house in Shantipur. You've been fasting. I'll just make a little soup sock, just a little bit of just a little sabji, a little something for you. Mool pal, soup sak, just a little something for you to break your fast with. You're a sannyasi. So the Mahaprabhu went back to his house. And Sita Thakurani, the mother of the universe, was there to receive them. And she had cooked a wonderful feast. Prabhupada used to say that he gave class in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He called it his transcendental cookbook. Because Kaviraj Goswami was a consummate chef. You can tell because the descriptions he gives of the prasad in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they demonstrate his learning in the art of cooking. There's no question about it. And so all the preparations are described. And Mahaprabhu came, he was bathed, Nityananda joined him, and the three Prabhus were together after Mahaprabhu's sannyas in Shantipur. And Nityananda sent word to all, everybody, a way to send word to everybody, tell all the Navadvipa Basis to come. They get to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one more time. Actually, Mahaprabhu was staying in Puri, and those yearly festivals of Bengali, it all came from this. Again, it was a way to charge mercy for the suffering of the devotees and making arrangements so that they would be given Mahaprabhu's association. And exactly a microcosm of the macrocosmic point we just described. That's the cause of Mahaprabhu settling in Puri and having this continued interaction with the Bengali Vaishnavas who come every year, and Sachimata being given some news of him. I just thought of that. That's a far out point, huh? Yeah. So then they came to Dwaita's house and she cooked and they did the aarti. And then Advaita had made three plates of prasad. And each plate had enough food for 15 men. And I have mathematical evidence for that. I'll give you just a minute. One plate was on metal, and the other were these two big, beautiful banana leaves. Sometimes you get a banana leaf and it's like it's kind of small and your food's pouring out the sides. Or sometimes it has like a really big ridge. And it's kind of like, it's hard, like the food kind of all comes together like that. Sometimes you get these really nice, banana leaves. So three plates of prasad. And Mahaprabhu was brought in, and he said, wow, this is pure devotion. He was appreciating so much Advaita and Sita's service. And he said, let's sit down on these three seats, and you can take this offering, and you can put it onto some plate, and then we'll take prasad. And Advaita loved to see Mahaprabhu as Krishna. He was the cause of the Mahaprakash. He's the cause of all these things. This is his special. Again, it's the same principle. It's the same principle of being concerned about us and giving us. And so you'll love to see Mahaprabhu as Krishna. So he said, no, I made these plates for you and Nityananda Prabhu. That's the Didi's plate, the metal plate. I'll take that. But you sit down, you eat these two plates. And Mahaprabhu said, I can't eat this. And he said, you eat 54 times a day in Puri. And you eat hundreds of preparations each time. You can very easily eat this. And he said, for you, what three men eat is not even one morsel. And so based on that criterion, this is no more than five morsels of food. So three times five is 15, so it was enough food for 15 men. So they sat down, and Mahaprabhu was like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And he said, stop cheating me. Just sit down and accept my worship, accept my seva. Nityanand Prabhu. He said, I've been fasting for 3 days tracking Mahaprabhu. I was hoping to fill my belly. And now I can see that practically speaking, for all intents and purposes, I'm simply going to have to fast because you're serving me such a pathetic meal. And Advaita said to him, I'm a poor Brahmin, Daridra Brahmin. I'm a Daridra Brahmin. And you're a mendicant, so don't be so lusty. And Nityananda Prabhu said, yes, you're a Brahmin and I'm your guest, and so you have to serve me to my satisfaction. And like this, they joked with each other. And the Prabhus ate. Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu ate and Advaita served them. And he just kept bringing more prasad. And as soon as they would finish a preparation, he would bring more. And Mahaprabhu eventually had to stop him. And then he's very expert. I appreciate this so much about Indian culture. You know, it's like, would you like some prasad? No, I'm okay. No, I'm okay means, I don't know if you have enough. In America, if you go, hey, would you like some sweet rice? And he goes, no. They go, okay. And they pour themselves a cup and they drink. And then you're angry at them. Why is he cheating me? He goes, you said you didn't want any. And then you feel like you're lusty by having to ask, and so you don't say anything, you fast, your mind's disturbed. So he said, do you want some, you know, so in India they'll say, do you want some sweet rice sugar? That's okay. I'm all right. And then they say, no, no, no. Please have some. And that's them saying back to you, no, I have enough. And you say, no, that's okay. And they go, no, no, please take some. And that's you saying, no, really, I mean it, I have enough. They go, I'll just take a little bit. So the waiter kept bringing more prasad. He kept bringing more prasad. And finally, Mahaprabhu said, I can't do anymore. And the waiter said, okay, I tell you what. You eat half of what I just gave you, and then we're good. You finish everything that was originally on your plate, half what I just gave you, and leave me some remnants, and then we're okay. And Mahaprabhu said, the sannyasi's not supposed to leave remnants. And the waiter said, don't cheat me. You please just do this. And so they finished their meal. Nityananda said, at the end of the meal, it's as if I had not eaten anything. He took some rice, threw it on the ground. And some of that got on the waiter, contaminated the waiter with the remnants of his food, and the waiter jumped up and became dancing. Advaita and Nityananda had this very special relationship, very sweet relationship. Sometimes you see like Radhanath Maharaj and some other senior Vaishnava and their exchanges of love, and you're reminded of how sweet our Gaudiya culture is, how sweet the Vaishnava culture is. You're reminded of these pastimes. So then they finished, and Advaita took them out, washed their hands, he'd washed their feet when they came in. He gave them some sweet spices to chew on, some chandan and a garland. It's actually a really nice order. You take your meal, then you get the garland, which cools you down, the chandan, and then you lay down and take rest. And he made them take rest. He tried to massage Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, that's too much. I've taken sannyas. Mahaprabhu himself was also in a mood of relishing, and so Advaita backed off at that point. They asked Haridas and Mukunda to come in to take prasad with them. And Mukunda said, I'm just now coming. I have one or two things to take care of. You start without me and I'll be in just a minute. And in this way he avoided having to come in and disturb the two Prabhus while they ate. Haridas, he was in a different mood. Haridas simply said, I'm lowborn. I'm fallen. I cannot come inside. I will sit outside and I'll take one ek mushti, I'll take one palmful of prasad after you finished eating. And Mahaprabhu accepted that. He accepted that sentiment. I'll tell you one quick story. I think this is therapeutic. Just part of this leela. Is a play about to start? Okay, 5 minutes? All right, I'll stay within 5 minutes. Why are you laughing at that? You don't believe me? It's like a cow that's been in a fire. Anytime they see red. So you must have heard Radhanath Maharaj say that I'll be done in 5 minutes. Just one more thing. There's one sannyasi. He went to Vrindavan with his parents. They were old, 70, 80 years old. He met one Vaishnava there, very friendly to ISKCON, very nice Vaishnava, elder Vaishnava. And that Vaishnava met the sannyasi. He's not a sannyasi, this Vaishnava. So he bowed down. Even though he's two generations older than the sannyasi, he bowed down to both the sannyasi and the sannyasi's parents. But that Vaishnava's like a guru to the sannyasi. So the sannyasi started explaining to his family, this is our culture. He's actually very senior. But he is bowing down out of etiquette. And that devotee stood up and he folded his palms with tears in his eyes. And he said to the family, he goes, yes, this is our etiquette. And we really feel this way too. We feel this way too. Haridas Thakur felt himself to be fallen. It's also proper, it was the etiquette, but he felt that. It's a very great secret, and Mahaprabhu generally, with a few exceptions, and Advaita, the Shraddha Patra, when Advaita gave the Shraddha Patra to Haridas, was an opposite example, but in general, they honored the sentiment of Haridas. They allowed him the sentiment because it was part of his bhajan, we should cultivate such sentiments ourselves. In some ways, it's a blessing of being born in the Western body, is that it's easy for me in comparison to so many high-born people to see myself as fallen. It's easy for me to acknowledge that when I meet wonderful Vaishnavas who've been raised with Dharma from their birth. And so we should cultivate these sentiments. So Haridas said, I'm too fallen. I cannot come inside. And they honored that. They let him stay outside and take the prasad afterwards. Then after some time, Mahaprabhu came and danced. And Advaita was also dancing. And they were singing and they were doing Harinam Sankirtan in Shantipur, right after Mahaprabhu's sannyas, after the Navadvipasis had finally come back, and they were having this sweet reunion. This sweet reunion. And Mahaprabhu was, Advaita was Pulak Ashru. His hair was standing on end. Tears were coming from his eyes. His limbs were shaking. He was leaping in the ground, spinning around and around. And then Mahaprabhu began to dance also, and he was also in ecstasy. And Mahaprabhu's ecstasy was almost impossible to describe. All the sentiments of Advaita and many more. And then Mukunda, while Mahaprabhu was in this ecstasy, began reciting verses of the separation felt by the gopis towards Krishna in Vrindavan. And at that point, Mahaprabhu's mind went to pieces. He went to pieces. He became stunned. He fell on the ground. He fainted. And at that time, Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu, they picked up Mahaprabhu and they held him up. And I'd like to finish with this. I like to hold on to this as a meditation. I see Mahaprabhu in great ecstasy, dancing in Krishna Prem, fulfilling and drinking from the cup of Radharani's divine love. And I see Advaita Nityananda right next to him, holding him up so he can walk. He can walk and distribute that gift to the rest of the world. Hold on to this vision of Mahaprabhu and the two Prabhus. And that's it. And 5 minutes. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Shri Advaita Bhagavan ki! Shri Sitanath Prabhu ki! Gaur Premanande!
His Grace Tukaram Prabhu ki!
Jai!
So thank you very much, Tukaram Prabhu, for drowning us in the nectar. All of you enjoyed the class?
Jai!
So as I said before, that 1.5 hours is too less for Tukaram Prabhu to actually share with us the unlimited nectar which he's carrying. And the amazing thing is it's also very inspiring for grihasthas, because many grihasthas come up to me and say, we don't get time to read books. We don't have taste for studying Srila Prabhupada's books. So here is one example of someone who's absorbed for many hours every day, studying and contemplating deeply on Krishna Katha. And that is the greatest treasure all of us have. So thank you very much, Tukaram Prabhu. Let us express our gratitude again by loudly chanting.
Haribo!
Haribo! And especially which the beautiful way in which he brought out the uniqueness of the contribution of Advaita Acharya was something which, we have read before, but the unique perspective which you brought out was special. And I think all of us will remember this particular Advaita Acharya appearance day and the special contribution of Advaita Acharya, because you questioned so many times, especially those who answered the question will never forget the actual answer which you brought out. And I think it's also interesting that when we now go through the first 7 chapters of Adilila, we will have a certain direction when we are reading. Thank you very much. So now we have Adikesha Prabhu, who is coordinating